Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, May 4th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Telus or Zimbabwe's international investors are expected to meet the Zimbabwe government tomorrow over the cancellation of the company's operation license last week.
The license was cancelled on the basis of its failure to comply with the 51% local ownership requirement as demanded by the Postal and Telecommunications Regulatory Act.
Zimbabwe has released its final crop assessment report showing that the country has a grain deficit and needs to import 700,000 tons of maize to avert food shortages.
The food situation in the country is very critical at the present moment because people were not able to harvest in most parts of the country. And of course, this year it has been worse in the Mutare region, Mashingo region, Midlands region and Bulawayo.
The Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe has criticized the moves by the government to levy school supplies, saying this will result in price increases for many supplies.
We are going to see increases in terms of the cost effect, in terms of running these schools. The supplier will just pass the weight and the burden of whatever levy to the consumer.
And some nurses in Zimbabwe have started boycotting night shift duties, saying they need higher allowances and improved working conditions.
Telecel Zimbabwe's international investors are expected to meet the government tomorrow over the cancellation of the company's operation license last week. Millions of people are said to be affected by this move. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera has more details from Harare.
Giving oral evidence on the status of the telecommunications company to Parliament's Information and Communication Technology Portfolio Committee, Information, Communication Technology, Postal and Courier Services Minister Superman Duanzira said the license was cancelled for failure to comply with the Post and Telecommunications Act, compelling foreign-owned firms to transfer majority stakes to local people. Telecel International currently has 60% shareholding in Telecel Zimbabwe, while the other 40% is owned by locals through the Empowerment Corporation. This, he said, was illegal, and Telecel Zimbabwe had failed to comply with the law despite being allowed to operate with the anomaly for 15 years.
The license was cancelled on the basis of its failure to comply with the 51% local ownership requirement as demanded by the Postal and Telecommunications Regulatory Act.
He, however, said despite the cancellation, the company can seek judicial recourse or appeal to him to be allowed to operate like what they did when the license was cancelled in 2007. He said it was worrying that Telecel had taken long to settle part of the $14 million which they had agreed to pay as a deposit of the $137 million required to renew their license in 2013. He said the best way for Telecel to get back their license was to comply with the country's laws, but committee chairman Nelson Chamisa and members of his committee told Manduanzira that the government's decision was not in the interest of the public, as more than 1,000 workers will be left jobless, while government would also lose millions in potential tax revenues. Telecel says it has paid more than $100 million to government in taxes since 2009. Manduanzira noted that he would consider the concerns of the lawmakers if Telecel Zimbabwe makes a formal appeal. Telecel has more than 2 million subscribers, and Postal and Telecommunications Regulation Authority has given them 30 days to switch to other networks before the Telecel network is shut down. In Harare today, journalists bemoaned government's disregard of press and media freedom, saying despite a constitution that guarantees these, repressive media laws remain on the country's statute books. In belated World Press Freedom Day commemorations organized by the Zimbabwe chapter of the Media Institute of Southern Africa, Zimbabwe Media Commissioner and media lawyer Chris Mike said it is worrying that Zimbabwe still has repressive laws such as the Access to Information and Protection of Privacy Act. Political analyst Ibo Mandaza told the gathering that while the Constitution clearly stipulates that the public media must freely determine the editorial policy, government is breaching the Constitution by interfering in the operations of the Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation and the Zimbabwe Newspapers Company.
It is a senseless exercise nowadays to try and control media. It doesn't make sense. To the extent that we have outdated media laws in this country, or media practices more, is the extent to which Zimbabwe stands out, and not only globally but even in the region, as lagging behind the global developments.
World Press Freedom Day is commemorated worldwide on May the 3rd. This year's event was held yesterday under the theme "Let Journalism Thrive Towards Better Reporting, Gender Equality, and Media Safety in the Digital Age." Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Zimbabwe has released its final crop assessment report showing that the country has a grain deficit and needs to import 700,000 tons of maize to avert food shortages. The country requires about 1.4 million tons a year for consumption. The report shows that production went down by 49%. Drought-prone Masvingo province is the hardest hit area, though Mashonaland West and Central have a surplus. Cabinet has also tasked Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa to chair the Special Committee on Food Security. Director of Christian Care, Stanislas Chatikobo, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that his relief and development agency is noting desperation in some communities it is assisting.
The food situation in the country is very critical at the present moment because people were not able to harvest in most parts of the country. Where we normally do our feeding, and of course this year it has been worse in the Mutare region, Mashingo region, Midlands region and Bulawayo.
Are you able to access funds to finance your budget, or there is donor fatigue?
We are still trying to look for resources to be able to support those areas. But at the present moment, we haven't had any commitment so far towards that.
What does your assistance consist of?
I think this time, if ever we are going to get some resources, we would be doing, I think, the cash transfers, which is the most, desired way of feeding by many agencies at the present moment, because food shortages may be actually a bit critical even to import, not knowing what the government may be trying to do. But at the present moment, we can't guarantee that we'll be able to get food outside the country. So if we're going to give cash, I think it would be much easier. We'll be able to empower the communities through that.
How much do you normally give?
We give money equivalent to a bag of 10 kg millimeter per person.
Roughly that is how much? $20, 10?
Around $6 per individual in the family. And then multiply that by the number of people in the family.
That was Director of Christian Care, Stanislas Chatikobo, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Meeting the shortfall might be problematic, as traditional supplier South Africa has indicated that it might cut exports due to its own food inadequacies. Green South Africa Chief Executive Jane de Villiers told the South African media that the country was faced with a maize deficit and exports to some other countries, including Zimbabwe, Malawi and Mozambique, will be sacrificed to meet its internal demand. Zimbabwe is likely to turn to its northern Zambian, to its northern neighbor, Zambia, for imports. Zambian Agriculture Minister Given Lubinda says the country will sell as much as 1 million metric tons of its white corn surplus. The Zambian government has set aside about almost one-third of its record 3.2 million tons of its 2014 crop to sell locally and to neighbors. Ironically, Zambia is now able to export grain grown by ex-Zimbabwean farmers whose land was compulsorily acquired by the government.
The Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, or PTUZ, has criticized the moves by the government to levy school suppliers, saying this will result in price increases for many supplies. Primary and Secondary Education Minister Lazarus Dokora told the Herald newspaper that they are now levying suppliers as a way of raising money to develop school infrastructure. Schools are set to open tomorrow. PTUZ General Secretary Raymond Majongwe says Dokora's policy will negatively impact already burdened parents.
We are going to see increases in terms of the cost effect, in terms of running these schools. The supplier will just pass the weight and the burden of whatever levy to the consumer, who is the pupil, who is the parent. And ultimately, education is going to become the victim. Ordinarily, many of these suppliers will now bring substandard material. If it is food, if it is books, if it is about uniforms, if it is about any provision that many of you don't forget. We are in a country where goods are coming from every corner of the world. So standards are seriously going to be compromised. And secondly, we are also going to see a lot of corruption because there's going to be a lot of connivance between these suppliers and the people who are going to be receiving these aid that evade or to inflate costs. So at the end of the day, the parents and the people are going to become the biggest victims of this ill-conceived viewpoint.
Schools are opening tomorrow. What grievances do you have as teachers?
We have a plethora of these grievances. Government has really not gone out to engage as a civil servant holistically. The issues of salaries is still hanging. Secondly, we are also very worried that there is a very clear disconnect between the economic reality in the country and what we as workers seem to be understanding. We have an unbelievable teacher-pupil ratio, where classes are going up from as small as 1 to 80 children in one class.
That was PTUZ General Secretary Raymond Majongwe speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
The family of missing political activist and journalist Itai Dzamara of Occupy Africa Unity Square has dismissed his unfounded reports, including that his bruised body was found recently being circulated on social media platforms. Zamara's young brother, Patson, says people circulating these rumors may be linked to his disappearance 57 days ago. He also says there are no new updates on his brother's disappearance from the police and the other arms of the government, which were ordered by the courts to find him and make the necessary report back to relevant authorities. Patson told Studio 7 they still have hope that Dzamara will one day come back home alive.
As of now, we haven't gotten anything solid. We have not made any headway with in our face for the time. We only come across rumors, some of which are clearly malicious in their nature. So, in theory, we haven't really gotten to that place where we managed to make some headway. And also, the police has been given reports mandated by the court, but our legal team also expressed reservation. They have view that police is not doing much against the order of the court.
You mentioned reports that coming out with regards to Dzamara. Are you going to take any action against those that you said are malicious?
Our legal team has always been doing that, but you see, some of those reports or some of those allegations or stories, you really cannot save them. Bump into some of those things on social media and what they do. So to really get to the bottom line or to the root system is actually not possible. So what we're doing is just sticking on to our mission and just holding on to hope that is alive.
That was abducted activist Itai Dzamara's young brother Patson Dzamara on the phone from Harare with Studio 7.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
nurses demanding increased allowances boycott night duties.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
U.S. federal authorities were searching the apartment Monday of two men killed by police in Texas after they began shooting at a security officer outside a building where a free speech event was taking place.
Israeli President Reuven Rivlin said today that protests against racism and police brutality by Ethiopian Jews have exposed an open wound that must be addressed.
Three Republican outsiders are joining the crowded contest for the party's U.S. presidential nomination in 2016. Former technology executive Carl Fiorina said Monday she is running for president, while retired neurosurgeon Ben Carson says he is also entering the race.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has announced millions of dollars in new aid for Africa at a Monday news conference in Nairobi, Kenya.
And Cameroon journalists are observing Press Freedom Day against the backdrop of what they describe as a persistent crackdown on media outlets and journalists.
Some nurses in Zimbabwe have started boycotting night shift duties, saying they need higher allowances and improved working conditions. Enoch Dongo, chairperson of the Harare chapter of the Nurses Association of Zimbabwe, says they decided to take this action following the government's failure to address their grievances. Dongo speaks to Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo about the work action and concerns that many patients will be affected by the job boycott.
I want to put this thing very straight. Nurses are not on strike. Nurses are only boycotting night duty. Reason being that they are being paid $3 after working 7 days of night duty. And I think that is actually a mockery. So they are demanding a review of that night duty allowance. And also, they are also complaining of regrading. Nurses are in the wrong grade. They were supposed to be regraded in 2010, January. Up to today, nothing has happened. And we understand the government has budgeted that money for in 2010 because there was a procedure which was supposed to be followed to put those nurses in those grades.
When you say that nurses are boycotting the night shift, what exactly do you mean? Are they leaving the job at a certain time in the day?
Yes, they are working from 7 to 4.
And why are nurses boycotting this issue? What do they want to be paid, as you're saying that they're only being given $3 for a 7-day night shift?
Yeah, nurses actually requested for $150 for 7 days worked during the night. Since these are antisocial working hours, where everyone will be at home with their families, but the nurses, they will be at work during the night. You know, working during the night is very hectic. But during the negotiation with the health service board, we discovered that the government doesn't have enough money to pay that. Then we consider the $70 that they proposed to say if we can get at least $10 a night, better than $3 that they are getting today. Because if you calculate $3 divided by 7 days, I don't know how much is that one per day, then divide it by 24 hours. I don't know how much is that per hour. Something like cents.
There are some who are saying that this boycott may affect the work that nurses do day to day in many of the Harare City hospitals. What's your response to that? Some are saying that they would like for them to continue negotiations, but while still going to work.
Yeah, the negotiations are still going on, but the negotiation has been taken so long, as I've mentioned before, that the regrading was supposed to be done in 2010, January. It's now 5 years ago, but nothing has been done. And all that time, nurses were negotiating with the health service board, but it seems as if there was no joy for nurses. That's why they decided to take this route.
And do you see this being alleviated anytime soon?
I think so, because we understand the government, the treasurer, has held 1.5 million for health workers' specific allowances, and we feel they can squeeze some funds from that amount to pay night duty.
That was Enoch Dongo, chairperson of the Harare chapter of the Nurses Association of Zimbabwe, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. Meanwhile, Health Minister David Parirenyatwa tells Studio 7 nurses should end the boycott, adding negotiations are in progress to address their grievances.
The Zimbabwe Nurses Association executive is in deep conversation with the Health Services Board, and we think that they are making progress. And honestly, there's no need to make patients suffer.
The nurses themselves are saying that they have taken this stance because they have been continuing to negotiate without any avail. Will there be some different view this time around?
Negotiations are always negotiations. You don't think that the negotiations bring out anything. They do. So you must always negotiate so that patients do not suffer. That's why there's a health services board. That is its function, to negotiate, to see anomalies, to correct those anomalies, but we not allow patients to suffer by any conscience.
And on that note, Honorable Parele Nyatwa, there are some organizations who are calling, as you're saying, for nurses to return back to the job because of what can happen without them being available.
The nurses are boycotting only night duty. They are working throughout the day and then boycott night duty. And we are saying that is really not acceptable in the sense that you make patients suffer. Patients would have been admitted during the day. They don't have enough cover at night. And that is really unprofessional and unethical. And I am saying that they should really come back to work, because their own executive is in deep discussion with the Health Services Board, including Minister of Health and Minister of Finance. There's no way that negotiations will not bring up something. They will. And that's what they should do. We do not want our patients to suffer unduly.
That was Health Minister David Parire Nyatwa speaking with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo from Harare.
The Ulawayo City Council, which was last week named the best performing local authority in the country at the Minister of Local Government, Public Works and National Housing's 4th Annual Local Authority Merit Awards, says this latest development has motivated it to strive for even much higher standards on its service delivery. Other local authorities that were recognized for their efforts in categories that included road maintenance, pollution control, and good governance were Victoria Falls Council, Umguza Rural District Council, and Kwekwe City Council, respectively. Bulawayo Deputy Mayor Gift Banda tells reporter Stendigle Mthlanga his council walked away with a tractor, projector, and 200 meters of precast concrete sewer pipes from the Merit Awards.
Even recently, we got congratulated of the good work that we are doing from the residents themselves, being represented by Bukra. We commended that the job that we are doing in the city of Bulawayo was really commendable. And if you look at the job that we are pushing on our roads, on our water, on our sewer, is coming second to none in the country. That's why we are being voted in as the best council in the whole of the country.
And which areas can you say you are doing best as the city?
We have always been doing very well in terms of water. Our water is one of the cleanest waters in the country. We pride ourselves with that, because even at council, we don't drink pocket water. We drink water that is coming from our taps. It's a sign of how confident we are with our water. And if you look at roads, our second achievement, I think, is based on roads. We have tried to rehabilitate all major roads that are running into the city. And I think the results are there for every other person to see.
That was Bulawayo Deputy Mayor Gift Banda on the line with Studio 7's Stendigle Mthlanga from Bulawayo.
And in sports news, Chicken Inn sent Zimbabwe Premier Soccer League champions Dynamos crashing to their first defeat of the season in style. Reporter Michael Cariati gives us the story.
Dynamos supporters are trying to figure out what hit them after their team was hammered 3-0 by leaders Chicken Inn at Rufaro Stadium and slipped to third place in the 16-team Kasolaga Premier Soccer League table. Two goals by Edward Chirambadare and another strike by Michael Katairo gave Chicken Inn, affectionately known as the Gamecocks, 3 points and extended their lead at the top to 2 points ahead of Triangle, who moved to second after their 3-1 win over Harare City at Gibo Stadium. This was Dynamo's first defeat of the season and their heaviest home defeat in the past 5 years. However, coach David Mangora was wearing a brave face, insisting that his team played very well but missed too many chances that could have secured them victory.
I thought we tried our best and we created some chances. We couldn't score today. The only thing I would say is it wasn't our day.
On the other hand, Chicken Inn mentor Joe Antipas says his team deserved the win and could have scored even more.
I thought it was a great win, great 3-0. First half, we had problems attacking and picking them up, and they put us under immense pressure, but we managed to weather the storm.
There was also a good win for financially struggling Capes United. The Green Machine travelled to Bulawayo for a showdown with Bulawayo Giants Highlanders and came out 1-0 winners. English coach Mark Harrison says his players are putting up a fantastic performance despite the financial circumstances in which they find themselves in.
And I'll tell you what they're delivering at the moment is second to none. I'm over the moon for them. If we can normalise our situation at the club, then who knows what we can achieve.
Capes United are now in fifth position with 11 points, one behind fourth place Daumine. The biggest winners of the weekend were Haumine, who scored 6 goals past our prisons in a 6-0 win, with Timothy January grabbing 4 goals. Coach Luke Masomere thinks his team is performing well.
I'm happy and I really expect continuity from now.
In boxing, the much talked about fight of the century came and went, and Floyd Mayweather is now the holder of the World Boxing Council, World Boxing Association and World Boxing Organization titles after a unanimous point decision win over Nani Pacquiao of the Philippines. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In the run-up to World Press Freedom Day, the Department of State highlighted the cases of several journalists around the world who are being silenced because they exercise their fundamental right to free expression and spoke truth to power. From Syria, the State Department cited the imprisonment of 3 important human rights and free expression activists who remain imprisoned by the brutal regime of President Bashar al-Assad: Mazen Darwish, Hana Zitani, and Hussein Kargir. Mazen Darwish is the director of the Syrian Center for Media and Freedom of Expression, a non-governmental organization he founded that specializes in promoting freedom of expression and that also played a key role in disseminating information about daily developments in Syria, including the atrocities committed by the Assad regime. Mr. Darwish and his 2 colleagues were arrested at their office by regime security forces in February 2012. The 3 men were held for 2 years without charge and an additional year without trial after charges were filed. Their trial on the spurious charge of promoting terrorist acts has been postponed 22 times. The prison conditions in Syria are abominable, with torture and abuse rampant in regime-run detention centers, as has been well documented, including by the 55,000 photographs smuggled out of the country in 2013 by a former Syrian army photographer who goes by the alias Caesar. U.S. State Department acting spokesperson Marie Harf called for the immediate release of Mazen Darwish, Hani Zitani, and Hussein Kargir, arrested and detained for exercising their human rights. She also called on the Assad regime to release all arbitrarily detained journalists and political prisoners who are currently suffering horrific conditions and are at risk of abuse and torture in the prisons.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will be talking with listeners and experts about media freedom in Zimbabwe.
And now to recap today's top stories.
Telecel, Zimbabwe's international investors expected to meet the Zimbabwe government tomorrow.
Zimbabwe has released its final crop assessment report showing that the country has a grain deficit and needs to import 700,000 tons of maize to avert food shortages.
And some nurses in Zimbabwe have started boycotting night shift duties.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.